This is Masters of Dispute Resolution on PodClips. Masters of Dispute Resolution is designed to provide those involved in the mediation process with the views of the most experienced and accomplished mediators and others experienced in the process. Through our discussions, you will gain insight into how to address and overcome difficult issues and achieve more satisfying results in mediation. Your host is Len Levy, mediator and arbitrator with ADR Services, Inc., a leading alternative dispute resolution provider. Lynn litigated complex cases for more than 30 years and has been a mediator since 1998 and is a member of the National Academy of Distinguished Neutrals. He has been recognized as a super lawyer in alternative dispute resolution each year since 2014. And now your host, Lynn Levy.
Thank you, Daryl. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us on Season 4 of Masters of Dispute Resolution, a podcast that will add tools to your mediation toolbox. We're brought to you by the National Academy of Distinguished Neutrals and ADR Services, Inc. Now, in each podcast episode, you'll hear a story about conflict, the impact that conflict had on the lives of the parties involved, how resolution was reached, and lessons to be taken from that conflict and its resolution. Now, many of the details of the story you're about to hear have been modified to preserve the confidentiality of the mediation while also conveying the essence of the conflict and its resolution. Today, we are going to be discussing, actually, we're going to be talking with Lance LaBelle, who has been a guest on Masters of Dispute Resolution, who will be conveying a story about a dog that whose owner took for a walk, and the consequences of that walk were somewhat horrendous for the parties involved. But first, let me just introduce Lance. Lance LaBelle, who I have gotten to know over the past couple of years, is and actually met many years prior to both of us becoming mediators, is a very highly regarded mediator and arbitrator. He's also, by the way, one of the brightest guys that I know. And prior to joining ADR Services, he had practiced law for many years, primarily, I think, doing insurance cases, but doing a wide variety of things other than insurance. And he practiced for actually over 30 years as an attorney, handling matters that I think gave Lance a background very, very useful to handling mediations. He is very, very much attuned to the main goal of mediation, which is assisting the parties in reaching an agreement. And he carefully listens to what parties have to say, and he gains an understanding of the positions, but not just the positions, but the parties' interests, because that's really essential to helping the parties reach a resolution. Although he has been known to be very evaluative at times, he focuses on building trust of the parties and having a productive working relationship with both counsel and their clients. And he looks for ways to expand the pie and employ creative solutions to reach a settlement. Lance, thank you very much for joining us today. And I look forward to hearing the story.
Thanks for having me, Len. It's good to be with you.
Well, let's just launch right into it. I've got to say, in terms of a background with dogs, I've owned dogs for many years. I do have kind of one rule in the house, which is I don't generally want to have a dog in the house that has the ability to kill me. Okay. And I think one of the people involved in the story you're about to tell didn't quite heed to that philosophy, so to speak.
That's right. And this is a case that is anything but routine, whereas most dog bite cases might be. This one had a wide variety of issues, insurance issues, liability issues, not so much damages issues. The damages were sky high. But I'll give you the overview, and you'll see the various interests and issues that were at play. What we had was a woman that owned an apartment building, and she was an elderly woman. She had some assets other than this apartment building, but predominantly this was her main asset. And then she had a young man who was a tenant, and the tenant had a dog. And the lease actually prohibited the tenant from having a dog on the premises. One day the tenant, the young gentleman, was taking the dog out for a walk and went to a shopping strip mall. And while at the shopping strip mall, the dog saw another man approaching, who was a middle-aged man, and the dog suddenly attacked that man and inflicted some severe injuries in the process. And while that was ongoing, another gentleman was driving along and saw the attack. We'll call him Good Samaritan. And Good Samaritan jumped out of his car to go help victim number one. And in trying to assist, the dog then turned his attention on Good Samaritan, and Good Samaritan came under attack. And that also resulted in some grievous injuries to Good Samaritan. And the police ultimately came upon the scene and were able to pull the dog off. The police were there very quickly, in fact. And then what inevitably resulted was the lawsuit by these two young men against both the tenant, who didn't really have any insurance or assets to speak of, and against Mrs. Apartment Owner, who had $1 million per occurrence policy, $2 million in the aggregate, meaning that if there's one occurrence, there's $1 million limit. If there's another occurrence, there's another $1 million limit, for a total aggregate of $2 million. And so that was her insurance asset. And then she had the apartment building also as her main asset. And so the two victims, who were hospitalized for many weeks, brought suit against Mrs. They also sued Mr. Tenant, but Mr. Tenant really didn't have anything. So he was not part of the case that I mediated. The case I mediated was the Mr. Victim 1, Mr. Good Samaritan Victim 2, against Mrs. Apartment Owner. And the issues that were at stake were as follows. The plaintiffs were looking at potential damages in the tens of millions of dollars. The injuries were that bad. This was a potential 8 verdict result had the case gone to trial. And the plaintiff's position was that each of these victims were the result of a separate occurrence, meaning victim number one was attacked. There was $1 million limit under the policy available for that attack. And then when Good Samaritan came upon the scene and tried to intervene, that was a separate occurrence because it happened somewhat separate in time and should be deemed to be a separate occurrence.
Lance, let me just interject something here, because I want to fill out the picture a little bit more. I have some questions. First of all, what was the size of this dog? I mean, he or she seemed to have caused a lot of damage. What was the breed? What was the size?
My memory was that it was a Rottweiler, but something in the back of my mind tells me that it may have been a mix, part Rottweiler, part something else.
Okay, and you're talking about a dog that's upwards of 80, 90 pounds or
sizable
more?
sizable dog and victims that don't really measure up well against that dog.
Okay, and the ages of the victims, were they middle age? Were they younger? What
victim number one was middle aged, and victim number two, the Good Samaritan, was a younger man.
Okay, so these folks didn't do anything to provoke the dog or anything like that. There wasn't any teasing of the dog or anything like that involved in this,
that's,
right?
That's correct. Apparently the dog's perception was that it, at least as the victim number one, needed to do something. And what's in the mind of the dog, we won't know.
Right. Right. So the injuries that you've described them as horrific and possibly yielding an eight-figure verdict if the case went to trial, and being hospitalized with serious injuries, what types of injuries were inflicted? Was it face and arm and those kinds of things, or?
The plaintiff's attorney provided photos of the injuries of the victims that were hospitalized. And you could see from these photos that this was absolutely horrific, that there wasn't going to be any question about damages in excess of the $2 million policy limits, if the policy limits were deemed to be $2 million.
Okay, so... And going into the mediation, did you have a conversation? Because I think I know it's your habit, have a conversation with counsel for both sides, which I've always found to be a very, very useful tool. First, can you just comment on how useful that tool is generally, and how it really helped in this case?
I don't always have those calls, but I would say this. When the parties share briefs, when counsel for the parties share briefs, we are much further along than when they don't. And that can really expedite the whole mediation when those positions are already out on the table. In this particular case, the parties had been exchanging correspondence. The plaintiff's attorney had made a demand for the $2 million limit, claiming that there was two occurrences, two victims, and therefore his thought was, pay the $2 million, and if you do, I will settle the case. But he, I think, was banking on the carrier perhaps not paying the $2 million and then being able to argue later that the policy was open and would satisfy a larger judgment. And so that had already taken place. And the insured had a coverage attorney, and the coverage attorney for the insured, for the tenant, was also arguing that there were two occurrences, because maximizing insurance coverage was in the interest of his client. And of course, the defense attorney hired by the insurance company for the tenant was arguing that, well, there's no liability based on any number of factors. Number one, that Mrs. did not know that there was a dog on the premises, that there was a dangerous dog on the premises, and could have done nothing to prevent this attack at the shopping strip, which was blocks away in public property. And then, of course, the Mrs. apartment owner just wanted the case resolved. For however we got there, that was her interest.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to get into how revealing this and allowing the mediator to understand what Lance has just explained to us prior to the mediation helped get this case resolved. I'm Len Levy. I'm chatting with Lance LaBelle. We're on Masters of Dispute Resolution, and we will be right back.
Masters of Dispute Resolution would like to thank ADR Services Incorporated, your partner in resolution, and its founder, Lucy Barron, for supporting this podcast. ADR Services is one of the leading providers of alternative dispute resolution in California. Leveraging technology to drive resolution, ADR Services is committed to dynamism in the face of growing client need and an ever-evolving legal climate. Now operating offices in all major legal markets of California, ADR Services provides unparalleled in-person and remote resolution services through its exclusive panel, comprised of more than 130 of the most distinguished and talented neutrals across the state, capable of handling challenging and complex mediations, arbitration, and other procedures in every field of law. When you seek the services of a neutral and you want results and satisfied clients, contact ADR Services, www.adrservices.com.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and I am chatting with Lance LaBelle, who is telling us about a dog bite case, but it's not just a dog one bite. We're talking about horrific injuries and the issues that the incident or incidents, we'll get into that in a second, raised for the mediation. Lance, when we broke, you were talking about things that had been exchanged, information that had been exchanged prior to, contentions that had been exchanged prior to the mediation, the actual mediation session. Can you please expound on how valuable it is in cases, especially with these kinds of injuries, to have exchanged that information prior to the mediation?
Oh, absolutely. In this case, it was particularly invaluable because all of the parties' positions had really been put out on the table, and so the coverage positions were laid out. The plaintiff's positions in various demand letters, the demand for the $2 million had gone into great detail as to why liability should be deemed reasonably clear as against Mrs. apartment owner, how the injuries, as horrific as they were, would obviously be impactful for a jury, and why with the two occurrences, the carrier first not having paid the $2 million, but and then later, of course, the argument was, well, now the policy's open and we will no longer take $2 million. All of that had transpired before the mediation, and the defense attorney had filed a motion for summary judgment as to why Mrs. Landlord should not be liable for the dog bite occurring a distance away from the premises, with the landlord, Mrs. Landlord, having no alleged knowledge of the dog being on premises and a lease that prohibited the tenant from having a dog on premises. And so all of this was already out on the table. And so by the time I was doing pre-mediation calls with everyone, it was really teed up for the mediation without having to do too much exchange of information.
Yeah, when you're trying to exchange information that go into that really goes into the the legal and the impact on the legal issues. For example, the whether there is one occurrence or two occurrences, things of that nature. It does, at least it's been in my experience, helpful to have given the insurance company the opportunity to have analyzed that and have had whatever discussions at whatever levels to be able to analyze that. Can you just expand on whether that is that's something that really came into play in this mediation?
It did. It was critical because this was a case that was dangerous for the defense from the standpoint. If you didn't win on summary judgment and you're now going to a jury with these plaintiffs and these injuries, the plaintiff's attorney was going to argue all sorts of things that might sway a jury. I mentioned one of them, that the lease prohibited a dog from being on premises, and the plaintiffs were arguing that the property manager lived nearby, was often over there, and the property manager for Mrs. Apartment Owner knew there was a dog on premises. Knowing that, and that not taking any action against the tenant to remove the dog from the premises was a substantial factor in the ultimate attack. And so if the plaintiffs got past summary judgment, then this was a case where you had an insurance carrier that had declined to pay the $2 million based on their liability argument and based on the, we only have one occurrence, that this is one cause, one dog, two victims, but only one cause, and so only $1 million available under the policy. And so they had to thread that needle. They had to win on liability and win on occurrence. If it went to a jury and they lost on liability and then they lost on their occurrence argument, then they could potentially have be exposed to excess exposure if it's deemed to be not a genuine dispute on coverage, or a failure to settle within the limits when liability is reasonably clear. And they'd have arguments on that in the second lawsuit. But all of this was coming together as a real quagmire, because you had all these competing interests. Everybody had lawyers, coverage lawyers, and you had trial coming up. You had the hearing on the motion for summary judgment coming up. And you also had a carrier that had some potential solvency issues, and that was coming into play, because at the end of the day, the plaintiffs were going to have to, if not get the insurance money, get the money from the apartment owner. And so all this stuff was coming together.
So there were a lot of very, very practical considerations that were driving the interests of the various parties. What I've heard you say is you've got the apartment owner who, in a way, is not just in a way, is it has interests that are diametrically opposed to the insurance company. She wants $2 million to be paid. I'm just assuming this. Does she want $2 million to be paid and the suit to be over? I would think. And then you have the insurance company that it has an interest in trying to pay as little as possible. And then you have the plaintiffs who are also considering whether it's even going to be collectible against the insurance company, which plays into the interest of the apartment owner. So there are a lot of moving parts here. And it sounds like, in effect, you are, in a way, directing this orchestra. Who's going to play what notes in this scenario?
Absolutely correct. And with all those moving parts, and you're now coming together for a Zoom mediation. And you couldn't have folks more diametrically opposed than what we have here, because the plaintiffs are looking, by the time we get to the mediation, for more than $2 million, claiming that we've given the carrier an opportunity to pay the two. They didn't. And so now we have a demand that is far in excess of $2 million. And an insurance company that comes in and is aligned on the liability argument with Mrs. Apartment Owner, but is not aligned with the apartment owner on the policy limits issue. And so they're going to come in and offer a few $100,000, whereas you're going to have the plaintiffs far in excess of $2 million. And how do you settle that case?
So at a Zoom mediation, you know, with the idea of who is present, you can have anybody present. But in this particular case, who was present? Who was there listening to all of this?
So we had plaintiff's counsel, who was an Oboda lawyer, very, very skilled, talented lawyer. The plaintiffs themselves were not there. We had Mrs. Apartment Owner in attendance. We had Mrs. Apartment Owner's coverage counsel in attendance. And we had the carrier's defense attorney and coverage counsel in attendance. I don't think I'm forgetting anyone. I think that's it.
Okay, so you had a lot of separate rooms, I would imagine.
A lot of breakout rooms and separate sessions, yes.
Right. So what I'd like to know is, how did you navigate between those various rooms? Who did you approach first in terms of getting this settled?
Well, I don't know that I navigated it very well initially, because we were really faced with extreme positions resulting in demands that were far in excess of even the $2 million policy limit, and offers that were not even near the $1 million policy limit. And so positional bargaining and going back and forth was a slow boat to China. And so we weren't making a lot of progress with that. And so what I needed to do was to really separate and do these were separate caucuses, separate rooms. I needed to have separate discussions with each room about not only the liability picture, but also the insurance coverage picture, so that everyone understood the risks. Part of what I do as a mediator is create a little fear and apprehension in each room. And so I was able to go through the liability arguments and point out the risks. And I was dealing with sophisticated lawyers, so I wasn't necessarily educating anyone too much, except maybe on the insurance coverage side of things. I think the coverage lawyers, because I have that particular expertise, were interested in what I had to say about that. And so I wanted the plaintiff's attorney to understand that ultimately there might only be a finding of one occurrence if a court were to rule on this. But on the other hand, there was an out-of-state case involving a dog bite that was somewhat similar factually, that found two occurrences. And so while that wasn't binding precedent, nevertheless was something that both plaintiff's counsel and the insured's personal coverage counsel were certainly talking about. And so there was risk for both sides on this case, certainly on the coverage issue, and also on the liability issue, because the plaintiffs could wind up with nothing if that summary judgment were granted.
We're going to talk more about that after we take a break. And we'll get into how the navigation, which I think actually was not done as poorly as Lance will have you believe. Sometimes we need to go down some roads before we realize that, nah, there's this turn we need to take. So we'll get into the turns Lance needed to take in order to get this resolved. When Masters of Dispute Resolution returns, I'm Len Levy, and we're talking with Lance LaBelle.
Masters of Dispute Resolution is sponsored by the National Academy of Distinguished Neutrals. NADN is the premier invitation-only association of civil mediators and arbitrators in the United States, with members in every state of the nation. Only experienced ADR professionals who are widely acceptable to local plaintiff and defense firms are invited to join the Academy's roster. The Academy's website, NADN.org, is the most widely visited neutrals database in the world today, with over 40,000 law offices, insurance companies, and corporations visiting our free website annually. Firms can search for neutrals by many criteria, including location, case expertise, qualifications, language skills, and most NADN members also publish their available dates, calendars, online, making NADN.org the go-to website for law firms wishing to schedule appointments online with their preferred mediators. For more information, please visit www.nadn.org. today.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy. I have as my guest Lance LaBelle, who is telling us a story about a dog, horrific injuries, and the aftermath of all of that, and how the mediation that he conducted resolved all of these issues. So, Lance, you know, you were talking about all of these competing interests and navigating between rooms, and it's not atypical for that to happen in insurance coverage cases, correct?
Absolutely. And it's also an area of the law that is not perhaps as well understood by many of the attorneys that I mediate with. And so I always have to walk a thin line. I'm not there to be the coverage attorney for either side and provide advice. But on the other hand, I do want to be evaluative enough in each room to be able to point out what the risks are. And so you're always walking that line between not becoming the advisor for either room, but nevertheless being the mediator with expertise in the area to help them navigate the issues.
Yeah, and the risks, the risk is very, very important, because everybody brings to a mediation, and when I say everybody, I mean parties, attorneys, and even the mediator. Different levels of risk aversion, really. You know, some people are willing to take risks, and some people are less willing to take risks. But being able to convey to the parties and to the attorneys the perception of a neutral about where those risks might be, while you've labeled it evaluative, is not completely evaluative. It's allowing them to have their level of risk averseness apply to the facts of the case. And you're just bringing it into much clearer focus.
That's exactly right. That's what it is, and knowing what buttons to push and when to push them. And one of the things that I always try and explain in both rooms, and it's most helpful if actual parties are there, not just the lawyers, is folks tend to focus on their best case, their best result, without also focusing on the downside, their worst result. And you know, when you go to mediation school, there's terms for this stuff, but the idea is, if you're plaintiffs, yeah, this could happen, and you could get that great result, or here's some alternative scenarios that might unfold, and it's important to factor those into the equation as well. And I do the same thing on the defense room, especially for parties, some of whom have never been in a mediation before and don't understand that, they think they're going to go in and get their justice, but that's not always what happens.
I think a friend of ours, common friend of ours, who has said on many occasions, the idea is to not necessarily get a fair result, but get a smart result. And that is something that we're going to talk about. The idea of the, let's kind of go this way. What was the result? And then we're going to get into how that result was achieved.
Okay, so the ultimate result was not necessarily entirely predictable by me, but the ultimate result was that the case resolved with the carrier paying $1 million and Mrs. apartment owner paying $200,000.
Okay. And all right, the journey that it took to get that with all of the background that you've given, all of the interests that had to be satisfied at least to some degree. How did you get there?
Good question. The way it unfolded was as follows. I knew the carrier and retained defense counsel really wanted their day in court on their motion for summary judgment. And which of course was a real impediment to mediating the case because they wanted to litigate their motion for summary judgment. And of course, the apartment owner believed in the merits of the motion for summary judgment, but just wanted the case settled. And then on the other side, you had the plaintiffs who wanted their bite at the second occurrence apple. They wanted to be able to argue that not only is there a two occurrence case, and they had their hurdles there. But after we establish liability, we're going to show that we made the demand within those limits, within the $2 million, and therefore we should be entitled to whatever ultimately the verdict would be. And so I wanted to do something that took all of those interests into account and see if I could settle a case with a mediator's proposal that accommodated those interests. And so what I did is I put a proposal together that ultimately no one wanted. Well, I should say the defense mainly didn't want it. And it went as follows. We would allow the motion for summary judgment to be heard by the court. If the court were to deny the motion for summary judgment, then the carrier would pay its $1 million policy limit and the apartment owner would pay $200,000. Now, of course, I wasn't suggesting this out of the blue. You're pre-squeezing this type of an approach with the insurance carrier, with the apartment owner, and with plaintiffs as well to see if they'd at least consider it. And I usually don't ask folks if they would accept my proposal before I issue it, but I'll talk to them about, is it something they'd at least think about and consider? And so, but then I had a twist on that because the plaintiffs weren't just going to take $1.2 million. They wanted their bite at the occurrence apple. And so I said, so then the parties will agree to submit to alternative dispute resolution. It could be an arbitration. It could be an ARB mediation where you arbitrate the issue first and then the arbitrator mediates it. And if it doesn't settle the mediation, the arbitration result, there's different ways you can do it. And so I suggested they'll then go and put that coverage issue before an experienced arbitrator. And depending on what that adjudication is, if there's a finding of two occurrences, then the carrier will pay another $1 million. And well, that seems like a lot of money. Not in this case, if there's a finding of liability. And so That was one scenario. And then I had another scenario. I said, but what if the motion for summary judgment is granted by the court? Then what happens? And so this is basically kind of a high-low kind of an approach. If the motion is granted, then the carrier will pay $400,000 and the apartment owner will pay the $200,000, mutual releases, et cetera. So we would let the motion go forward, and then there was a chance for a two-occurrence arb if the carrier lost, if the defense lost. But if they won, the plaintiffs were still getting something. They weren't just out of court with zero. And so I floated that whole concept out there to the parties, and I think the plaintiffs would have gone for it, but the defense wouldn't. The defense didn't want to take a shot on the two occurrence issue if they lost their motion. So I wasn't able to issue that proposal, but the proposal that was on the table is what ultimately still led to a settlement. And I find that happens sometimes, that the mediator's proposals, even if they're unsuccessful, sometimes are a stepping stone to getting the case settled anyway. And that was the case here.
So you actually did set it out as a mediator's proposal, or just floated it?
I floated it. Yeah, I never formally issued it. I floated it, as I often do, in terms of would it get consideration. And the defense was not amenable to receiving that proposal.
We could get into a whole discussion about mediators' proposals and the effect on future negotiations. But you got past that. You got past the mediator's proposal with it being rejected. The next step was, how do you get to the final result?
So the middle ground, and now we're after the mediation has ended. We're still, because they waived the termination clause after so many days, we're still under mediation confidentiality, but we're talking after the actual day of the mediation. And the middle ground to that is where ultimately the case settled, where the plaintiffs still got some money above the $1 million policy limit. They got the $200,000. But the carrier did not subject itself to potentially the argument that there's two occurrences, $2 million or worse, that the policy is now open if they unreasonably failed to settle within the limits. And so the middle ground was essentially the same as number one approach, where the motion for summary judgment is denied. The carrier pays $1 million, the apartment owner pays $200,000, but without the adjudication, without the ADR proceeding on number of occurrences. And that is ultimately where it went and how we got the case settled. And what it really was the essence of a compromise, because the plaintiffs were facing the possibility of getting zero if they lost on the summary judgment motion. And that was a real possibility in this case. And the carrier was facing the risk of potentially a $2 million occurrence finding, and then did they unreasonably fail to settle within the limits and a higher exposure. And then there was the solvency risk also with this carrier as to whether there was going to be a carrier to collect from on the back end, which is of concern to the plaintiffs, since the apartment owner only had limited assets.
Well, Lance, this has been a fascinating, fascinating the story, but both because of the incident itself, but also with how the complexity of this fact situation and the dispute was resolved, and it takes a great deal of understanding, and I've got to commend you, a great deal of understanding of potential risks, of coverage issues, of where the parties could possibly go. And perhaps bringing this all into focus in terms of this is where it could go. This is the risk. What are you willing to do? Ultimately, seems to have gotten this case settled. Very good job.
Oh, thank you. A real challenge for sure. but it takes good lawyers also to get to the end zone. And we did have good lawyers all the way around on this one.
And that absolutely is part of the equation. When you have attorneys who are willing to listen and you have parties who are willing to listen, that is a large, large part of the equation as well. Well, we're out of time, and I've got to thank you very, very much, Lance, for joining us. What is the best way to contact you if somebody wants to book you for mediation? I'm sure they will.
Probably just go on the ADR Services website, and they'll find me there under the neutrals heading, and there'll be contact information.
Okay, so that's adrservices.com.
Correct.
Yes. Okay. And thank you very, very much, Daryl Wayne, my engineer and producer. And I'm your host, Len Levy. This is Masters of Dispute Resolution on podclips.io, powered by Infigen Labs. I hope you will continue to enjoy the stories we bring you. And in the meantime, stay well, keep listening, and remember, peace of mind is enhanced when conflicts are resolved.
If you wish to contact Len Levy, you can reach him through his email at lslevy@adrservices.com, through Len's website, lenlevymediate.com, telephone him at 818-903-5562, or contact his case manager at ADR Services, 213-683-1600.